Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all of the latest news from J2 and J3 coming your way very shortly. It's J3 later with Magic Mike Innes in JTalk Short Corner, but for now the focus is on J2 with me, John Steele, and James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
Hi John, I've just about thawed out from Sunday at the Gogo Curry Stadium, and now I'm psyching myself up for another freezing game on Saturday. How are you?
Yes, very good. Thanks, James. And of course, listeners are going to hear all about the Kanazawa game in JTalk Short Corner later. But similar here, actually. It's rainy and cold in Yokohama at the moment. But if the weather clears up, I'm hoping that I will be allowed to go and watch some Levan Cup action with YSCC playing against Mito tomorrow night. But we will see. There are a few variables in play for that one. But speaking of Mito, that's a J2 team, James, a seamless link. Let's talk about round two of the J2 season, which took place last weekend. We'll talk about the games from Saturday, first of all, but in our new style, more casual, more conversational style for this season, we're going to pick out, first of all, Nagasaki's home game against Sendai. A very impressive performance from the visitors Sendai. They ended up winning 2-1. They went in front just before half-time. Masahiro Sugata heading in Motohiko Nakajima's free kick. In the second half, Sendai had plenty of chances to extend their lead, didn't they? Their rookie midfielder Aoi Kudo hit the crossbar with an excellent strike from long range, and Ryunosuke Sagara hit the crossbar as well. This was after some excellent approach play from Motohiko Nakajima. Late on, Edegaard Jr., who'd come on for Nagasaki up front to replace Juanma, headed in to make it 2-1. That was how the game finished. Nagasaki 1, Sendai 2. James, for my money, a very impressive performance from Sendai. I think the only complaint or disappointment they would have is this game was still in the balance at the end. I thought they probably should have had the game sewn up after about an hour or so. What did you make of it?
Yeah, they were good, Sendai. The first half, I thought actually it was a bit lifeless, this game, but it was changed by that goal, which came right before the break. And to be honest, I think it was pretty poor from Nagasaki, because you could see when Nakajima was taking a free kick, and you could see as he was waiting to take it, he was gesturing and shouting to Sugata, who was standing alone at the kind of the far side of the penalty area. And Sugata scored, basically kind of a free header. I'm sure maybe defenders didn't pick him up, or whoever was supposed to cover that zone didn't get there in time or whatever, or because it was backpedaling and Sugata was coming forwards. But it was all a bit soft, I thought, from Nagasaki, but you know, well worked from Sendai. Their second goal, Masato Nakayama, that was a really good strike. It's nice to see from him, because he had a hard 2023, but then who at Sendai didn't, actually, to be honest. They had a rough year last year. Also, you mentioned Kudo as well. I thought he played really well in midfield. And it looks like he's come through their youth system. Right? He's been there since he was a child, quite young. Come through the junior youth and the youth, and went off to university and then come back. So I guess he'll be, you know, Sendai supporters will be quite pleased to see him in the team and doing well. For Nagasaki, they haven't really got going yet, have they? They've really struggled for any kind of rhythm the week before against Fujieda. And then in this game, most of my focus was on Juanma Delgado, because he was making it all about him. Just needs to give it a rest with the chuntering and the gesticulating and the temper tantrums. It only took 6 minutes for the referee to have to tell him to shut up and go away. And I'm wondering, like, do you think the referees get this sinking feeling when they see him on the team sheet? Think, oh God, gonna have to deal with him for the next couple of hours. Like when you have to teach the class that's got the really naughty child in it. Or, like, I'm sure you've had, I've got now and have previously had co-workers who have to have something to get annoyed about to motivate themselves. Maybe Juanma's like that.
You're saying we all work with a Juanma in you know, yeah, in every office around the world there's a Juanma. Yeah, I think that's probably true.
I thought the referee, I thought she it was Yoshimi Yamashita, I thought she dealt with him really well. In the way that you in parenting manuals they say that if your toddler is having a tantrum, just ignore them. That's pretty much what she did. And he was just flapping his arms and stomping and yeah.
I think we can say in Juanma's defence, he's very much an equal opportunities moaner, isn't he? Like he didn't give Yoshimi Yamashita an easy ride because she was a lady ref or anything like that. It's just the usual level of gesticulation and shoulder shrugging that you get in any time. So I think we can definitely you know, he's doing a lot for the kind of FIFA fair play or you know, egalitarianism in that sense.
Yeah, but yeah, did well not to get booked. I'm sure he's angling for setting a new personal best on yellow cards. But yeah, so Nagasaki, they'll be pleased that Edgar Jr. is back here. He came back towards the end of last year, didn't he? He was injured, I think. And they'll need his goals, I think, because I don't think Juanma will match his haul from last year. You know, I think that was an exceptional year. I'm sure he'll score plenty, but I don't think he'll score that many. So they'll need the likes of Edgar Jr. to step up and score, because that's his job. Whereas Sendai are looking much more vibrant than they were last year. They seem to be playing with a lot of confidence. All the players you mentioned, Nakajima, Kudo, Sugata. I thought George Onaiwu played pretty well out on the left as well, getting into space and running at defenders.
Yeah, very very direct and aggressive play style. I've enjoyed watching him as well.
So yeah, things seem to be looking quite good for Sendai at the start of the year, which is nice. It's a real change from the last couple of years. What did you think of this one then?
Yeah, no, I think I pretty much agree with everything that you've said, Anna. Thank you for mentioning the winning goal scored by Masato. Nakayama, thanks. Yeah, because I, for some reason, that's just not in my notes at all. Obviously, quite a fairly important moment in the game, as it proved to within a goal. It was a kind of, I feel like that goal that he scored is the kind of goal that should have a name, like an Italian or Portuguese word for it. But it's like a kind of side-on volley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you're the striker, you just need the ball to hit you and it will go in and you can get all the credit. But this goal wasn't like that. He really had to arch his body because the ball was slightly behind him, and he had to make sure he got exactly the right contact with his instep to get that ball on target. So fantastic goal for him, and like you said, and it's a while since we've seen him sort of wheeling away and celebrating a goal, I think. So that was good to see. Obviously not for Nagasaki supporters, but for J League watchers in general. Yeah, I think Sendai have been impressive so far. If it wasn't for a very dodgy offside call, they'd probably be sitting on 6 points. From six, wouldn't they? Because they were denied by that late equaliser against Oita in round one. And I think they're at home to Mito coming up in round three. So they've got a chance to pick up 3 points there. If they can get 7 points from the first nine available, that will be a real breath of fresh air compared to last season. And they do look transformed. You picked out Onaiwa. I think he's kind of emblematic of that. But there are other players that you've name-checked that have been impressive as well. It's early doors, there's a long way to go. But yes, I think we expected Sendai would be better than last year, but we weren't sure how much, and we're still not. But definitely there are loads of positives to take away from the first two games for them. For Nagasaki, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because do you remember when they signed Edgar Jr. from Yokohama Marinos? And everybody was kind of like, well, that's just a cheat code for J2. And it didn't really turn out that way. And then Juanma had this fantastic season last year, and they were able to retain him for this season. And you know, so far that hasn't panned out. So I don't know if they're perhaps relying a bit too much on one figure or one striker in terms of the way they organise. But I do think we cut them a little bit of slack. They did have quite a turbulent off season, didn't they? With Fabio Carrile sort of signing a new contract and then up in sticks immediately to go back to Brazil and to Santos. So I think we need to give them a little bit more time, but they'd be disappointed that they haven't really looked that threatening in front of goal in the first two games. They've been a bit wobbly at the back as well, but early days, but lots to work on for them. Just quickly from the rest of the Saturday games, James, I'll run through real quick. Shimizu had to work hard, but eventually won 2-0 at home to Ehime. Both goals from Koya Kitagawa in this game. Kofu also made it back-to-back wins over the first two games. They won 2-1 at Mito. Eduardo Mancha scored for the second game in a row, followed by a Takuto Kimura strike to put Kofu 2-0 up. Mito did pull one back with an absolutely fantastic dipping volley from Seichiro Kubo. This is well worth checking out online, a sort of... I don't know, potential goal. We're in goal of the season territory. It's such a shame it ended up being only a consolation in this game. Jeff Chiba bounced back from their home defeat against Yamagata in round one by drubbing Fujieda 4-0 at Fukuda Denshi Arena. Kazuki Tanaka scored twice, and Akiyuki Yokoyama scored against his old club. That's two goals in two games for him. Jeff, there was no celebration this time, as he apparently... still fondly remembers last season at Fujieda. Fujieda desperately poor defensively in this game, James, as you pointed out in our text chat. Classic J2, and worth checking out on YouTube for completely different reasons than that Kubo goal. Tokushima scored first away at Kagoshima, but ended up losing 2-1. Akito Tanahashi put Tokushima in front from the penalty spot after he was fouled by Ryota Izumori, Kagoshima keeper, who wasn't that impressive in round one either. Shota Suzuki powered in Rei Yonezawa's cross to make it 1-1, and then in stoppage time, Tokushima just couldn't clear, and Seiya Take pounced and drilled into the back of the net from just inside the box to make it Kagoshima 2, Tokushima 1. So first win back in J2 for Kagoshima. I noticed they've come from behind in both games so far to take points, and Tokushima down at the bottom, 0 points after two games. At Resonac Dome, Oita and Yokohama FC drew 0-0. The best chance in this game was Yokohama FC's penalty given after a foul on Katsuya Iwatake, but Solomon Sakuragawa had his spot kick brilliantly saved by Oita's young keeper Taro Hamada. So Oita 0, Yokohama FC 0 at full time. Yokohama and Oita both still looking for a first win of the season. James, how about the action on Sunday? So four more games from the round two slate. I think we're going to focus on Kumamoto 1, Gunma 1. Gunma snatching a point here with a 93rd minute equaliser from Kosuke Sagawa. But it was Kumamoto who'd gone in front 10 minutes before half-time. Daichi Ishikawa heading in a deep cross from Ayumu Toyoda. Very nice to see Ishikawa back among the goals after his horrible injury last season. I think it was an ACL, wasn't it? ACL injury that he had last year. Last season, he scored 9 in 17 games before his injury. So having him back is potentially huge for Kumamoto. I mentioned as well for them, I really liked Bei Jongmin and Chihiro Konagaya in this game. I thought they looked really good at the top end of the pitch as well. But right at the death, Sagawa, who's a big boy, isn't he? He chested the ball down in the box and swept it past Ryuga Tashiro in the Kumamoto goal for a scarcely deserved point. So it finished Kumamoto 1, Gunma 1 at Egao Kenko Stadium. Hard week for Gunma, James, with some kind of media reports of power harassment allegations against the coach Tsuyoshi Otsuki. But they I don't know if they did deserve a point. They snatched a point anyway in this game. What did you think?
Yeah, well, Daichi Ishikawa, Gary Irwin called him as the key man because last year was a bit of a what might have been. I think, as Gary pointed out, that Kumamoto were doing well until he got injured, and then their season, their league form dropped off dreadfully. So let's see if he can get going in this year. There was some complaint about his goal from Gunma, that maybe it was offside. I couldn't tell from the replay because it was only from the diagonal angle from the halfway line. Although interestingly, on the full match, they did actually show a replay of it, which DAZN have been accused of not showing replays of controversial moments. So that was interesting. But yeah, I think Kumamoto should have won this one. They controlled the first 80 minutes. They forced so many good saves from Masatoshi Kushibiki. They passed it around confidently at high tempo. They were just miles ahead of Gunma. And then for some reason, they let Gunma back into it. In the last 10 minutes plus stoppages, Gunma started to apply pressure and start put good crosses in. For the goal, I'm sure that Ryuga Tashiro will be unhappy with that.
Mm.
conceding that goal. I think not just obviously goalies are always unhappy to concede a goal, but I think perhaps he'll probably feel that he should have got to that. He'd also probably feel that his defenders should not have allowed that shot to get through or to be taken at all. But it was interesting, and I think what made it interesting was the off-field stuff at Gunma. I don't know much. All I've read is one report where some allegations of power harassment against by Ordski towards staff members, I think was it, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Using harsh language or something like that. I mean, when this kind of stuff happens in professional sport, the players will always say, "Oh no, we don't pay attention to all the stuff in the media. We just concentrate on our on our game plan and stuff like that." But I'm sure this kind of thing has to have an effect. So I think perhaps they might have felt something, whether it would have been distracting for them or whether it would have been a kind of galvanizing thing for them to try and get back into this game late on, because it seems like Ordski is very popular with a lot of players. But also, this isn't the first time that manager at a J2 club has been accused of power harassment, is it? Because it was Hideki Nagai at Verdi. Was that back in 2021 or something?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
And didn't he end up being relieved of his duties?
Yes, I can't remember how it went down officially, but I think perhaps there was some gardening leave and then he left. But it was all a bit messy.
Yeah.
And I think we don't talk much about sort of Japanese society or Japanese culture on the pod. We should probably do a bit more of that actually from time to time. But I think this concept of power harassment often runs into a couple of issues specifically in the sort of professional sports context, because it's, the manager tends to be, firstly, they're a senior figure because they're the manager, and they're also senior in terms of age. And most of obviously the players are younger, and a lot of the club staff in the J League tend to be quite young as well, because J League isn't the place you go to make lots of money. So it tends to be younger people working there. So I think there are a few kind of classic conditions for harassment to take place, I think, in some senses. I think another problem is maybe, I might be wrong on this, but I'm not sure if the J League, I'm not sure how much they control or dictate what constitutes power harassment at clubs, if that makes sense. And that clubs might be left to kind of figure that out for themselves. And I wonder if at some clubs, I strongly suspect that there isn't a kind of codified system of what's acceptable and what isn't. And I think if you're a guy of a certain generation, what you think is perfectly reasonable comment or criticism to a younger person from a different generation is harassment. And if there's no kind of rule book or handbook or manual or HR department, guideline to go to check who is right and who is wrong, then you end up with this kind of, I was going to say he said, she said, but it's probably more like to be old person said, young person said, isn't it here? Mm-hmm. So I think it's something that the J League is going to have to, hopefully in the short term, but more likely in the medium term, I think there's going to have to be some kind, a bit more of a kind of codified response to this. I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be some document or guidelines that all J League clubs have to sign up to. And then we can actually decide if power harassment or any kind of harassment really has taken place. Because it's quite fashionable, isn't it, to attach the word harassment to something in Japan. We need proper definitions, I think, before we can comment. Yeah,
I think also it can be a bit misleading, because they have in Japanese it's power harassmento. Sorry, it's a katakana word. Mm. It's a borrowed word, but I guess
it's workplace bullying, isn't it? Basically.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. People who are not familiar with Japanese language might understand it better as workplace bullying. And as you just mentioned, an old person versus young person, that the way things work a lot of the time in Japanese companies is that people are promoted on seniority or, you know, years of service rather than ability. I'm not saying that, as you know, football managers, you know, obviously they have to be good at their job to get a job, right? But in terms of age, there's a, and gender as well, right? It's you know, older man tends to hold the power in situations, and yeah, like you said, it, of course, the football manager tends to be the most powerful. Well, you know, apart from the chairman or GM or whatever, but they hold a lot of clout. So, yeah, it. But that's the thing, right? What's one person's throwaway comment could be a hurtful comment to the recipient or to the person who was listening. You know, there are different. There's always different perspectives. And
yeah, I think that the classic example would be, I think one of the examples given in the report that I read, which was through Google Translate. So, you know, full disclaimer, it might be something, there might have been fewer octopuses in the real situation than there were in the Google Translate one. But it was something to do with basically complaining in front of everybody else when somebody was late. And to be honest, I've done that. I've been the person moaning at somebody else in front of everyone, and I've also been the person, I've been singled out in front of the group I don't know if I was late, I can't remember what I did now, but I was singled out, you know, in that way, and it's not nice, but depending on, you know, there are circumstances where that might not be a bad thing. Like some clubs have like the worst trainer that week has to wear like a pink bib or something on Friday, right? Or whatever. I'm not sure where you draw the line. And different, you know, people are all different. So they have a line that's in a different place. So I think that's like you said, that's where it becomes so difficult and so nebulous. Like I'm sure I've made throwaway comments in the past and it's hurt somebody's feelings. And I didn't mean to harass or upset somebody, but that might have happened. So that might be the situation here. We don't know, but I do think it's interesting perhaps to mention as well, this kind of thing, I believe, probably goes on at all football clubs and all sports clubs, because it's a high pressure environment and you've got a lot of, there's a lot of young, men, there's a lot of testosterone around. I think a lot of stuff gets said and a lot of stuff happens, and it's always interesting what comes out in the press and what doesn't. And it tends, what's interesting about this Gunma thing is it tends to be when teams are doing badly that this kind of stuff comes out. But obviously Gunma had like the kind of best season ever, probably last year. So he's kind of strange. When this kind of stuff becomes sort of, you know, comes out into the public, it doesn't surprise me when it's after a team's been relegated or whatever. But yeah, it's a surprising timing, surprising context. So we're waiting to see. I think there is some investigation being done by Gunma and by the J League. So we'll wait to see. But it's interesting because I don't know if you perceive this too, but this seems to come up more and more nowadays.
The times are changing, and I think people now need to be more careful, not careful, need to be more thoughtful of how they talk to other people and deal with other people. And what, in terms of sports, like what's motivating for one person is not motivating for others. I mean, I'm sure everyone who's listening, I'm sure you as well, has played sport at some point in your life. And I'm sure you've had coaches who were really good and you really wanted to work hard for them. And you had coaches who just like, you think, well, why did you say that? That's a stupid thing to say. Why are you talking to us like that? I don't really want to.
Are you saying
me not want to play?
Yeah. Are you saying that I should stop sending you those all caps texts and voicemails at 2 a.m. about the pod?
No coach, no boss. No. But and it's the same in every workplace, right? And whoever you're dealing with, I think people need to be more mindful of how they are towards other people, whether that's people of the same level as them in the hierarchy, or people, you know, people who work under them, if you're a manager or whatever, or if you're a teacher, how you talk to your students, stuff like that. We're getting into the realms that I'm going to start talking about research and stuff like that that I've been reading, so let's move on.
I was about to move you on before the we don't have an in-house legal team at JTET. I don't know if we could borrow one from Big Pod. We'll cut it there before we get into any specifics that could be incriminating. But I think the point is to move things on, I think football doesn't exist in a vacuum. It reflects sort of wider trends in society, doesn't it, at times? You can see that with things like hooliganism at stadiums, racism at stadiums. It doesn't just appear in stadiums from nowhere. It reflects the what's happening in society as a whole. And I think this tendency to there's no way that there's more harassment in Japanese society now than there was 40 years ago. There's absolutely no way, but it's reported more, it's seen more, it's acted upon more, so people feel more confident coming forward. I think that's a good thing. But I think in most cases, I do believe people don't want to harass others. They do it accidentally or unintentionally, and they often need guidance or they need training that's not the way to do it or whatever. So, we'll see. I think there'll be plenty of time to revisit this, James, over the next probably 100 years. Especially in the Japanese context. So we'll move on for now. That was an interesting digression. Just to round up the Sunday games, there was late drama at Iwaki as the home side equalised with the very last kick, and it finished Iwaki 1, Okayama 1. Okayama had gone in front right on half time, the ball being bundled over the line, I think, by Daichi Tagami. He was credited with having the last touch. Midway through the second half, there was a big moment as Tagami was shown a straight red card after he tangled with Naoki Kase. Okayama were down to 10 men. That's a Freudian slip, isn't it? Yeah, we'll leave that in for comedy value, I think. Okayama down to 10 men. And then in the very last minute, with Iwaki's keeper even, Kotaro Tachikawa, up in the Okayama penalty area for a last-gasp free kick, the ball ended up bobbling around and Kaina Tanimura back-heeled it into the goal from inside the six-yard box. So 1-1 at full-time in that game. Yamaguchi got a huge crowd of 8,906 and a hard-earned 3 points against Akita. They ended up winning 2-0. An early header from Tsubasa Umeki put Yamaguchi in front. A fine strike from Kota Kawano came back off the crossbar in the second half as Yamaguchi threatened again. Akita were reduced to 10 men when their defender Keita Yoshioka was shown a pretty harsh red card for a lunging tackle after he overran the ball with about 15 minutes to go. And that allowed Yamaguchi to seal the win late on when Seigo Kobayashi headed in a left wing cross from, we've checked this, James, it was Henan, wasn't it? On the overlap down the left wing. He took full advantage. Yeah, taking full advantage of the extra man to send in an inch perfect cross. So Yamaguchi 2, Akita 0. Back-to-back defeats for Akita, and Yamaguchi, quietly impressive, have 4 points after two games. And finally, joining Kofu and Shimizu on 6 points from two games at the top are Montedio Yamagata, who won 3-1 at Tochigi. The first half of this game was explosive, James. Tochigi going in front early on with Koya Okada tapping in at the far post from a corner. But it was 1-1 soon enough, with Zane Isaka's pass being deflected in for an own goal. The big moment really was in the 25th minute. Tochigi got a penalty when Kisho Yano was pushed over by Keisuke Nishimura, but Masaki Goto brilliantly saved Yano's penalty to keep the scores level. And right down at the other end, straight to 8. Nishimura then was the hero. He crossed for Isaka to head in to make it 2-1 to Yamagata. And before half-time, it was 3-1. Isaka again involved. He headed down for Junya Takahashi to fire in from the edge of the penalty area. So 3 goals in 2 games for Takahashi. And Tochigi 1, Yamagata 3 was the full-time score. Back-to-back defeats for Tochigi. Just 1 goal scored so far and 6 conceded. So a tough start to 2024. For them. James, I think we've talked about all the football from J2 from the weekend, so if you're okay, we can take a quick look at the fixtures that are coming up. Before we do that, though, there's our regular feature, which is so new that I almost forgot it. It's the most Bravo player from round 2. James, what have you got for us?
Well, a couple of honourable mentions. from Yamagata, Masaki Goto, for the penalty save, and also because for the third goal, it was his long kick perfectly onto the head of Isaka, and Isaka headed it for Takahashi to score. So I know everyone knows I'm a big fan of Goto, so any excuse. But he's earned an honourable mention. And also Isaka as well, involved in all three goals. Had a couple of other chances as well that when one went wide, one over. But yeah, really good performance from him. Not a player, but honourable mention to Yoshimi Yamashita for the way she dealt with Juanma. But my most bravo player is Masatoshi Kushibiki of Gunma. The goalie, he made a string of acrobatic saves, particularly early in the second half, to keep Kumamoto at bay, keep Gunma in the game, and eventually put them in the position to grab that point, which, to be honest, I'm not sure they had any right to be able to grab. So if my choice is Kushibiki. What about you?
I think that's a good shout. You've name-checked probably two of the best keepers in the league there in Goto and Kushibiki, I think. So, yeah, fair play. Yeah, I can't really disagree with anything that's been mentioned there. My honourable mention is Seichiro Kubo, for nothing other than the fact that the goal that he scored for Mito against Kofu was like from another planet. I'm not really sure if this guy has ever been on my radar, really, but just the quality of that finish. There is a YouTube clip going around this week, or I saw it on Twitter, of, I think it's a Doncaster Rovers manager scoring a volume thing. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
And for some reason, that really put me in mind of this kind of dipping, like perfectly sort of parabolic volley. And he didn't celebrate much, presumably because obviously, you know, his team were losing at the time. But I think you would have to bring me back to continue the game. I'd be celebrating if I'd scored a goal. That fantastic stuff from him. But yeah, my most bravo player for round two is Motohiko Nakajima of Sendai, who is one of my favourites. So it's no surprise that I'm highlighting him. But I think he obviously set up the first goal in their win at Nagasaki. He did everything he could to set up a second one for Ryunosuke Sagara, but he got it wrong and hit the crossbar. But his overall play was excellent, as usual. And yeah, I know this is for round two, but he also hit the crossbar, Nakajima, back in round one, and just generally was really in sparkling. He's been in sparkling form for the first two games, so I wanted to pick him out. I'm still not sure what he's doing in J2. I'm not sure why a J1 team wouldn't have taken a chance on him in the transfer window, but a J1's loss is Sendai's gain. And Motohiko Nakajima is my pick for most bravo player in round two. Yeah, we're building up quite a good squad here, James, with most bravo players. We should probably revisit this at some point. Okay, James, we can move on, I think, and preview the football coming up. Now, before we talk about the J2 weekend, we're going to give a quick shout out to the Lavan Cup, because about half of the games from round one are coming up this midweek, Wednesday, March the 6th. So I think we have nine games in the kind of new look Lavan Cup here, all at 7 p.m. There are a pair of all J2 clashes on the slate, so Ehime against Nagasaki, Kagoshima against Jeff Chiba, and the other seven ties all have a J3 team taking on a J2 opponent. So to run through them quickly, YSCC will take on Mito, Numazu host Sendai, it's at Sanuki against Akita, there's a Kyushu derby as Kitakyushu take on Oita, it's Miyazaki against Okayama, and Ryukyu against Fujieda. One of the Lavan Cup rules or conventions is that the lower ranked teams are all playing at home, with one exception, Gunma against Sagamihara. That's being played at Shoda Stadium in Maebashi, Gunma's home ground. I think there's a stadium booking issue for Sagamihara. So, nine games to look forward to in the Lavan Cup this midweek. James, where is the value, do you think?
Well, I'm very interested in Ehime against Nagasaki as an all J2 tie, and also that is that's being broadcast live on Lemino, which is I think it's part of Docomo, or it's run by Docomo or something. And then all the other games are going to be available on demand from 10:30 tomorrow night, Wednesday night. But I'm quite intrigued by Numazu against Sendai. Both teams started quite well. Numazu started very, very well. Scored 7 and not conceded any in their first 2 games. And so I think it'll be a bit of a test for Sendai. And Ryukyu probably will fancy their chances of getting something from Fujieda, bearing in mind how generous, shall we say, Fujieda's defence was at the weekend. I think this. I'm really interested in this newly revamped Levan Cup. I think it's great that we're going to have all 60 teams involved. I think it's going to be interesting to see who takes it seriously, who can't be asked. And if there are any teams who can't be asked, I think they should be afforded ultimate scorn in the following pod. I'm calling on you and Mike to join me in that.
Yes, no problem. Scorn is very, very doable for us, I think.
And I'm interested in the broadcast, right, with Lemino, just how that goes, right? What the quality is going to be like, what the interface is going to be like, how you're going to be able to skip forwards and back. Because in DAZN, it was always skip 30 seconds forward or skip 30 seconds back, which was sometimes inconvenient and sometimes not. And it took me a few games this year to realize that that had changed to skip 10 seconds forward and back. I was wondering why everything was taking so long. I was just on autopilot clicking away through players faking injuries and stuff. I'm interested in Ehime Nagasaki and Numazu Sendai, I think, for this Wednesday. What about you?
Yeah, I think that those are good shouts. I've got one eye on Miyazaki against Okayama, only because the winners of that tie will host Yokohama FC in round 2. So some kind of personal interest for me there. I thought Kita Kyushu against Oita might be an interesting one, because I don't think Oita have looked too hot in the first 2 J2 games. I appreciate that Kita Kyushu are not an earth-shatteringly difficult opponent at the best of times, or they haven't been in recent years, but you never know. I kind of was scanning the fixtures looking for where there might be an upset, and we were talking a little bit before recording. A J3 team beating a J2 team almost doesn't qualify as an upset, I don't think. I wouldn't be surprised in any of these ties if the lower-ranked team advanced to the next round. But perhaps we'll see more shocks maybe in round 2 when we get there. I like the fact that round 1 is split over 2 midweeks. So I think we've got 9 fixtures this midweek, and I think the rest the next midweek, March the 13th. I think that's good from a kind of exposure point of view. It also reduces the amount of crying I'll have to do trying to wrap my head around all the fixtures. They spread them out nicely for amateur podcasters as well. We'll see how it goes. I'm interested in the attendances.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the TV coverage, like you said. I think Lemino, they have shown some football before, mainly like pre-season friendlies. Like, I have a feeling that a couple of these, the Al Nassr games from their recent tour, and I think maybe a couple of PSG games as well were on Lemino.
They're showing all the J3 Tohoku teams games as well, aren't
that's
they?
Right. Yeah, a huge broadcasting deal. Clearly, I was just thinking when you mentioned all of these games are going to be available from 10:30 tomorrow. I expect mass server outages as people clamour to watch a full replay of YACC against Mito. I am really curious because I think Levan Cup has needed a boost. And I think this is a really good, as men sort of nearing middle age, and we're predisposed to this light change, aren't we, James? But I think Levan Cup really needed a glow up. This is what we've got. So I hope it's successful. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm quite interested to see whether this has any effect on the Emperor's Cup.
Well, I think they'll have to respond, won't they? Yeah.
I'm sure they'll respond by making it worse somehow, because they seem incapable of That's another issue. That's
yeah. Well, there will be time, I think, during the season to discuss that. But I'm looking forward to a next on the pod next week, a quick kind of bit of a debrief of Levan Cup results, attendances, and issues that you had getting into Lamino, that kind of thing. So yeah. So I hope everybody enjoys the midweek Levan Cup action. We'll round that up on the pod next week, and I think Magic Mike Innes is going to have a lot to say about it as well, isn't he? Because it's a lot J3 vibes. Taking place. How about J2? We've got a full round of games coming up at the weekend. It's a round three already. What about the Saturday games? March the 9th, there are four matches, James, all kicking off at 2 p.m. We have Iwaki hosting Kagoshima, Yokohama FC hosting Perfect Yamagata, Perfect Kofu hosting, shall we say, Imperfect Tochigi. And, well, talking about Imperfect, Tokushima against Akita, basement battle as well. Which one would you pick, James, from the Saturday slate?
Yeah, the early relegation six-pointer, I think.
Big
Tokushima
boy.
Akita.
Big boy football, isn't it, already?
What I've seen of Tokushima, they've been absolutely dreadful. And I haven't seen that much of Akita. I've only seen the highlights of their games, but I think they seem quite limited, even by their own standards. So I don't know how that's going to go. I'm sure it won't be pretty. Iwaki Kagoshima. That'd be interesting. Iwaki seem to be all right going forward until they get to near the opponent's box, and then they just kind of fall to pieces. And in defence, they're still a little bit dodgy. Kagoshima maybe kind of finding their feet at this level again, but they will be, well, actually both of these teams will be on a bit of a high from their late goals last weekend, and neither will have played midweek. Neither will have played midweek, they will have a midweek game. Kagoshima are playing, aren't they?
Oh, sorry, yes, that's right, against Jeff, yeah.
So Kagoshima will have played midweek. Iwaki will have a game following this, so I mean all of these teams are, to some extent, are going to have to juggle their squads, use their squad appropriately, so I think those two games kind of stand out to me. How are you feeling about Yamagata?
Not great. Yeah, I will say that the last 30 minutes of Yokohama's game away at Oita, we did actually click and play some good stuff, and we had enough chances just in that kind of 30 minute window to probably have won the game. Obviously missing the penalty was not helpful, not conducive to winning, but that was positive. The preceding 60 minutes and the first game for Yokohama City were not good, were not encouraging, and Yamagata, they've looked really good, haven't they? I think the things for Yokohama FC to cling on to is Yamagata's third consecutive away game to start the season. So they'll be going some if they can make it three away wins on the spin. They can be got at defensively. I know they have Masaki Goto as the last line of defence, but in front of him is Keisuke Nishimura, so you've always got half a chance. Yokohama FC are, you know, it's not a bad squad. It hasn't quite clicked yet. I think Yamagata have clicked straight away. Yokohama FC haven't. I think that is actually going to be a really, really good game. And I'm very frustrated that my son is going and I'm working and I can't go. But yes, we hope it goes well. I would say Kofu Tochigi as well. You know, Kofu could make it three straight wins, couldn't they? By winning this game. And Tochigi have been shipping goals quite alarmingly so far. I think there could be some early pressure on them if they don't get a positive result in that game, but we will see. How about Sunday, James, March the 10th, that's the rest of the action. Kicking off at 1 p.m, we have Sendai, their first home game of the season. They host Mito. Three games at 2 p.m, it's Fujieda against Oita, Okayama against Yamaguchi, and Nagasaki hosting Shimizu. Then at 3 p.m, Ehime against Kumamoto. And rounding off the fixture list at 5 p.m, Gunma host Jeff Chiba. What are we thinking, James?
Well, Nagasaki against Shimizu looks interesting just because Nagasaki, like we said earlier, they had a very, their fixture's not been kind to start the season. And I don't think they will from what I've seen so far, I don't think they'll have enough to beat Shimizu, but you never know. They might, you know, find their feet. I'm also quite interested in Fujieda against Oita. Fujieda might look at Oita and think, well, they haven't really clicked going forwards. Maybe we can get our defence back in order, because they managed to keep a clean sheet in the first match against Nagasaki before the horror show against Jeff. Whereas Oita will look at Fujieda and think, wow, now this is a chance for us to score some goals.
Mm.
So which of those is going to be, which is going to win out, I think it's going to be interesting. Mm. Yeah, what about you, Sunday?
Yeah, well, I agree with your assessment. I think Okayama Yamaguchi, I think if you told me 2 weeks ago you'd be eyeing this game as a sort of interesting one, it might have been a good time to get my mental health checked. But I think considering they've both started quite impressively, this could be an interesting game. Like Okayama, obviously, they brushed aside Tochigi in the first game, 3-0. And then they almost got another clean sheet in a win at Iwaki, but letting that they were down to 10 men, then they let in an equaliser with the very last kick. So Okayama could easily be on 2 wins from 2. Yamaguchi were pretty comfortable winning their game against Akita at the weekend, even though Akita also were down to 10. And Yamaguchi should really have won at Yokohama FC on day one, and they were pegged back by an equalising goal as well. So I think there's two teams who are on 4 points, but should probably be on 6 going head to head. I'm really, really curious to see how long Yamaguchi can sustain this impressive start. And for Okayama as well, I think we both had them just outside the playoffs, didn't we, in our predictions? Or you had them in. Anyway, we've got them kind of top 7, let's say. So it's interesting to see how they kind of go on after making a pretty decent start. And then, yeah, Ehime Kumamoto. Yeah, I think both teams that we expect are going to be in the bottom half of the table, it's fair to say. And Kumamoto looked really, really good at home, didn't they, in the last game against Gunma, but they couldn't get the job done. So we'll see how they bounce back from that. And yeah, Gunma against Jeff Chiba. Something about this game just screams peak J2 to me. So I'm sure that'll be good. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a good game. So all right. Well, plenty to look forward to as always, James. No no flies on us. I think we can leave it there and let the listeners look forward to a midweek and a weekend with plenty of J2 interest. If that's all, we'll say goodbye from the J2 segment of the pod. Thanks for listening and downloading and supporting us on Patreon and the big pod as well. We really appreciate that. But don't go too far, because in a moment Magic Mike Innes will be with you, and he has all the J3 latest in a J-Talk short corner. See you soon. Bye for now.
Hello and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that covers all things J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in Round 2 of the new J3 season, as well as previewing the midweek Levain Cup ties and the Round 3 matches coming up this weekend. There were 7 games on Saturday, the 2nd of March, and after 4-1 wins for both teams in the opening round, Ormia Ardija and FC Gifu faced off at the NAC 5 Stadium. A close match, this one. In the first half, Ormia once again getting some joy down the left via the combination of Toya Izumi and Wakaba Shimoguchi. And in stoppage time at the end of the opening period, those players created the game's only goal, Izumi feeding Shimoguchi, who curled a peach of a shot into the top right-hand corner. Ardija almost claimed a second in the 56th minute, but Kazushi Fujii's shot was deflected onto the post by a last-gasp challenge from Kentaro Kai. Gifu pressed for the equaliser and nearly got it late on through Ryoma Ishida, who twice brought good saves out of homekeeper Takashi Kasahara. Final score, Ormia 1, Gifu 0. Arguably the best piece of play deciding the match, and Ardija make it 2 wins from 2. Gifu stretched the home side, and in Daigo Araki also have a left-sided player catching the eye in the season's early weeks. Ormia may have kept their 100% record, but top of the table sit Azul Claro Numazu, who at their Ashitaka Park Stadium put Gainare Tottori to the sword. The opener came in the 16th minute, Kyota Mochi advancing down the left and with the outside of his boot sliding it in for Hagumi Wada to finish with a first-time shot. It was nearly 2-0 on the half hour, but Yuma Mori's low shot was brilliantly tipped round the post by Gainare keeper Riki Sakuraba. The visitors' best spell came early in the second half when Sota Higashide had a couple of half chances, but the dangerous attacking play came from the hosts and Azul Claro extended their lead on 52 minutes. Takumi Hama's low cross going beyond the far post where Mori finished from a tight angle. 9 minutes later it was 3-0, a weak clearance from Ryuto Koizumi eventually falling to Tatsuya Anzai, whose deflected shot was tapped in by Mochi. Scoring was rounded off by the goal of the game, a superb team move starting with Mochi, ending with Anzai threading it in for Wada to fire home from 10 yards. Final score, Numazu 4, Tottori 0. Masashi Nakayama has his Azul Claro team working for each other, and it's hard to argue with 7 goals scored, none conceded, 6 points from 2 games. Kentaro Hayashi's Gainare all at sea here, looking a poor side. The other team to come out of Saturday's games with 6 points from 6 were SC Sagamihara, home winners over Vanrare Hachinohe. It wasn't quite a carbon copy of their opening day smash and grab at Giravance Kitakyushu, but the green and blacks were hardly a compelling attacking proposition here. The game's only goal came half an hour in, a loose ball from Hachinohe's Daiki Yagishita collected by Taira Maeda in midfield. His through pass went to Kazuki Fukui, whose layoff was hammered into the top corner by Yuzo Iwakami, his first goal for nearly 2 years. A long-range effort from Kazuma Nagata was perhaps the closest Vanrare came to getting on the score sheet, and although they had a decent amount of possession, the visitors rarely threatened Motoaki Miura in the home goal. Final score, Sagamihara 1, Hachinohe 0. A one-off blaster from well outside the box, winning it for the shade-fortunate hosts. For Vanrare, it just didn't click for them here, and they're yet to get off the mark. An unexpected candidate for Game of the Round, but there was much to enjoy in the sunshine at Tegevajaro Miyazaki, where the visitors were Fukushima United. Shuhei Terada's Fukushima began on the front foot and took the lead on 14 minutes, Yuto Ozeki picking up possession in midfield and slipping it through to Kiichi Yajima, who avoided the challenges of 3 home defenders to lash in his shot from 15 yards. Tegevajaro were almost made to pay for more poor defending soon afterwards, but keeper Shunsuke Ueda tipped Kota Mori's shot round the post. At the other end, Daiki Kusunoki's 20-yard effort drew an equally good stop from Kenshin Yoshimaru, and soon afterwards, Kusunoki blasted into the side netting as the hosts tried to pull level. But Fukushima went 2 up in the 38th minute. Ozeki, one of their pair of teenage loanees from Kawasaki Frontale, skipping away from 4 defenders to finish brilliantly from the edge of the area. What a way to score your first J-League goal, and he clearly loved it. Miyazaki pulled one back before the break through Shu Yoshizawa, heading in Raiju Obuchi's corner at the near post. In the second half, Kazuki Dohana thumped a header against the bar for the visitors, and Ueda again saved well, this time from Takeaki Harigaya, after brilliant work by Yuto Matsunagane. Final score, Miyazaki 1, Fukushima 2. Tegevajaro's Yuji Okuma struggling to organise his defence, although right back Ikuru Aoyama returned from injury here. Fukushima are pretty raw, but with their speed and energy, they definitely have something to offer. Dramatic end to the game between FC Ryukyu Okinawa and Matsumoto Yamaga. Almost a dramatic beginning too. Hayato Asakawa hitting the post for Matsumoto after 12 seconds. Both teams were looking shaky at the back, but the opening goal didn't come until 5 minutes into the second half. Kaiga Murakoshi putting Yamaga ahead after Reo Yasunaga had charged down an attempted clearance by Shou Hiramatsu. The lead lasted 11 minutes, Haruto Shirai drawing Ryukyu level with a penalty after he'd raced past Masato Tokida and been pulled down. Shirai had a great chance to make it 2-1 when he was put straight through on goal, only to have his shot blocked by visiting keeper Shouma Kanda. But Shirai made amends with 4 minutes left, rolling it into an empty net after Atsuhito Ihara's cross had been deflected past Kanda by the luckless Tokida. Not that the home team could defend their advantage, as in stoppage time, Shou Sumida launched a free kick into the Ryukyu box, where Tokida headed it across goal for unmarked substitute Takato Nonomura to nod in. Final score, Ryukyu 2, Matsumoto 2. Ryukyu's Shirai goes to the top of the goalscorer charts with 3, but his defensive colleagues couldn't keep up their side of the bargain. Yamaga, without captain and playmaker Yusuke Kikui, just scraped the away point. Giravance Kitakyushu got their first point of the season by means of a home draw with Iwate Gruja Morioka. Ko Seung-jin put the Sunflowers ahead in the 15th minute, taking advantage of some dreadful Iwate defending to convert Kakeru Sakamoto's near post cross. Ko went off injured before half-time in this one, making it the second week in a row Kitakyushu have lost a starter early on. Asahi Yada absent from the lineup here. Gruja drew level 11 minutes before the break, Daiki Kogura swinging in the cross, Kenneth Otabo beating Koji Sugiyama to it and heading powerfully in. The nearest we came to a winner was late on, Giravance's young Gamba Osaka loanee Ryuta Takahashi hitting the byline to cross for Takaya Inui, whose header was well saved by Takuo Okubo. Final score, Kitakyushu 1, Iwate 1. Both teams underwent significant rebuilding over the winter, and here we saw the early season consequences. Looks like Gruja's Tetsuji Nakamikawa is already dissatisfied. He made 5 changes to his team from round 1. Kamatamari Sanuki against Katane Toyama also ended level, and if between these teams more of the focus is on Toyama as promotion hopefuls, coach Michiharu Otagiri can't be pleased with their second lacklustre performance of the season. Their ex-Sanuki striker Kohei Matsumoto hit the bar with a left foot shot on the half hour, but overall the visitors created few clear chances. The home side looked more dangerous in the second half, the combination of Gentaro Yoshida and Nina Tominaga almost providing a route to goal on a couple of occasions, Tominaga drawing saves from visiting keeper Tomoki Tagawa, while Kazuki Iwamoto was just off target following a good team move in the closing stages. Final score, Sanuki 0, Toyama 0. Kamatamari coach Atsushi Yonayama can measure his team's improvement by the fact they at least held their own here. Katane fans are still waiting for their season to start. Extra time. 3 games then on Sunday the 3rd, when 2 further teams were successful in keeping their 100% records. We'll start in the snow at the Gogo Curry Stadium for the first competitive fixture at Zvegan Kanazawa's shiny new ground, where the visitors were FC Imabari. Marcus Vinicius was Imabari's match winner last week, and he opened the scoring here as well, rising to glance in Hikaru Anai's in-swinging corner in just the 5th minute. Debutant Zvegan forward Marley Son put a header just wide from a Shintaro Shimada pullback, but that was a rare opportunity for the hosts, who conceded again midway through the half, Marcus turning Takayoshi Ishihara inside out before setting up Takafumi Yamada, whose cross was diverted in for an own goal by Norimichi Yamamoto. Just before half-time, Marcus humiliated Ishihara once again, leaping above the home defender to power a header against the posts. Quick reminder, Marcus was in the J3 Best 11 last year, and he started this season like a one-man cheat mode. It was 3-0 by the break, Arai sending a low cross into the Zvegan area, where veteran Toyofumi Sakano had time to control it and finish from 8 yards. Kanazawa finally gave their fans something to shout about 16 minutes from time. Kyohei Sugiura collecting a loose ball just inside the opposition half, advancing unchallenged to the edge of the area and firing into the bottom corner with some style. Final score, Kanazawa 1, Imabari 3. A desperately disappointing performance and result for Akira Ito's squad and the home supporters. Props to those fans who travelled from Shikoku standing in the wind and snow to support their team. And dead level with Imabari in the early standings are FC Osaka, winners of a, let's call it, low-key encounter at YSCC Yokohama. The home side's best attempt came on 27 minutes when Koki Matsumura clipped a left-foot shot against the post. But that aside, the Kanagawa Seagulls were comfortably held at bay. And if YSCC aren't looking like they can score many, they always look capable of conceding, as in the 39th minute when the hosts allowed both a Yuta Shimozawa high ball into the box and a Takuya Akiyama header, which went beyond keeper Jun Kodama and in. And it was game over 8 minutes after the break, Kodama punching away a long throw, Shimozawa volleying it back over the line. Final score, YSCC 0, Osaka 2. Kazuki Kuranuki's reshuffled YSCC lineup far less competitive than in round one. Osaka under Naoto Otake, not much fun to watch, but so far, so effective. Finally this week, Nara Club hosted AC Nagano Parseiro, both sides looking to bounce back from opening day losses. Parseiro's Kyoji Kutsuna had a goal disallowed for offside just before the half hour. Moments later at the other end, Yota Shimokawa launched a high cross that Kim Min-ho had to be alert to tip round the post. And Nara went in front in oddly similar circumstances early in the second half. Shota Yomisaka's lofted pass drifting in at the far post, despite Manato Hyakuda's attempts to claim a non-existent touch. Parseiro's equaliser came in the 94th minute, Hinata Konishi chipping it into the middle, Kensei Ukita's header squeezing inside the post, and Nagano almost stole a win seconds later, Leo Yamanaka rounding keeper Mark Vito but unable to keep his shot on target. Final score, Nara 1, Nagano 1. The home team showing more defensive frailty, unable to see out the period of injury time. Parseiro remain a classic J3 proposition, overrun with inconsistency, but they deserved and got something from the game. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the midweek Levain Cup ties and then the round three fixtures over the weekend. On Wednesday the 6th of March there are 7 Levain Cup first round encounters with J3 interest. The competition format is such that the J3 teams are all at home with the exception of Sagamihara, for whom stadium issues mean they travel to Zespa Gunma. Otherwise it's Numazu against Vegalta Sendai, Ryukyu against Fujieda Mai FC, Sanuki against Blaublitz Akita, Kitakyushu against Oita Trinita, YSCC against Mito Hollyhock, and Miyazaki against Fagiano Okayama. Good luck to all the third tier representatives as the J-League Cup finally becomes the J-League Cup. Then J3 Round 3 is split over 4 days, including a couple in April, but there are 4 games on Saturday the 9th of March. The GoGo Curry Stadium stages another big, big match, beleaguered Kanazawa against high-flying Osaka. Can Sagamihara keep going their perfect start as they head to Nagano. An opportunity for Matsumoto to pick up points at home to YSCC. And two teams with underwhelming beginnings to the season meet at Toyama, where the visitors are Nara. Three games to follow on Sunday the 10th, when something's got to give at Imabari, who host a mouth-watering match against Numazu. There's a crucial encounter down at the foot of the table between Tottori and Miyazaki. And finally, Gifu are at home to Sanuki. With all the week's business seen to, then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.